Alrighty, I am pleased to be joined by the Pigskins and Pageantry podcast. It's a college football podcast, season 2, episode number 3. I have them right here. How's it going, guys?
Good. How are you?
Doing good.
I am doing great. Again, thanks for wanting to come on. I saw you guys on Instagram. Had to ask you if you wanted to come on. Looked like a good podcast. So that's kind of what we're on here for. And if you want to tell us more about your podcast before we get started, it's about college football. You probably have a lot of your listeners listening, so they know kind of what it is. But, you know, my listeners don't. So if you want to go ahead and just kind of introduce you guys and your podcast.
Sure. So we are an SEC focused college football podcast, and we started in 2017. So we're actually entering our 7th season, which just sounds really weird to say. It seems like yesterday. And I feel like our show has definitely found its identity over the years. But to begin with, we really just kind of wanted it to feel like three friends of three different fandoms sitting around the campfire talking about the games they just watched. And we just wanted it to like feel real, right? Not contrived or just designed to kind of be clickbait, which, you know, everybody loves a good argument. But at the end of the day, we want it to be like a fun conversation without name calling and other ridiculous stuff that's found on shows that are basically a dime a dozen, but yet have become the cookie cutter norm for shows most of the, you know, these days. So, that's kind of my little spiel about it. And if you guys have anything to add, please jump in.
Yeah, I love that it's, you know, like you said, three different fandoms. We have, you know, UGA represented with Wes, Tennessee represented with
Matt.
You don't
have to say it like that, Jesse. You didn't have to say it like that.
And then Alabama with myself. And it's really interesting. Of course, these three fandoms are historically those that don't get along. Obviously, if you're out on a game day and you're playing each other, then you're going to be ribbing at each other. But it is kind of cool to have a conversation talking about not just our teams, but all of the teams across the Southeastern Conference, and be able to do it in a way that's really fun. And we do jab at each other, but it's never in a disrespectful manner. And I like to think we have a lot of fun things on the show, a lot of silly topics, but also we do talk about what happened in the game, what we think is going to happen next week, a lot of statistics. So it's a fun show.
If you're going to talk, you might as well have fun doing it, right? So,
exactly. Absolutely. Yeah, well, basically, what we like to do is we like to have a good bit of fun. We do like, and I'm the one on the podcast that tends to be the outrageous one and makes flamboyant gestures and hyperbolic statements. So we just like to have a good time. We just three friends that like to sit around and talk football.
All righty, that is great. It's been a little while since we've talked about college football, so I'm excited for you guys to come on. Now let's start the upcoming season. Let's talk about that a little bit. Now, of course, week 0 is this Saturday. As the time of this recording, it's on Wednesday. It's technically the start, but there's not a lot that many big games. There is a few like Notre Dame and Navy. But if you guys kind of want to talk about the upcoming season, I know the top 25 rankings came out, and it was a little surprising to see Alabama at 4, which is kind of lower than I thought. But if you guys kind of want to talk about the upcoming season and about the rankings.
Put us at 4. I want us at 4. Because I just saw Nick Saban come out of his press conference and the man smiled. And not just a soft smile. It was like a grin. So I want us at 4. Give us something to fight for. Let us prove ourselves. I'm all for it. I think it's no surprise where Georgia is. We expect it. I don't know that they're going to have the Minnesota of the 1920s and do a three-peat, but I'll certainly eat my words at the end of the season if I need to. I think what we often say on our show, at least, is preseason rankings don't matter. It doesn't matter at all. The only
thing that matters
is at the end when we're going into the committee picking the teams that are going into playoff. Before then, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, you know, Saban is smiling because he doesn't have to deal with the rat poison. You know, a lot of times
he's going also getting ready to retire. Let's remember that part too.
A lot of times he has to go into the season with that burden of either number one, number two, something like that. But number four, a little chip on your shoulder, got something to prove and some motivation for the team. I know why he's smiling. It's, you know, so.
Yeah.
Not to mention the fact that this is the season, this is the last season we're going to get pure conferences and all the other things, because the SEC is getting ready to add Texas and Oklahoma. You have all the ridiculous stuff that's happening with the other conferences right now. So, I mean, this is this is potentially it. And I think this is, and Wes and Jesse, y'all probably know this better than I do. I think this is the last season without the expanded playoff, right? Aren't we going to the expanded playoff next in 20, was it 24?
25? I thought it was 25. 45. Regardless.
It was long enough to be out of sight, out of mind for a little bit.
Bring that one on for sure. And I know, JJ, you're going to probably get tired of us talking SEC. And I know we'll get to the conference realignment, but my like immediate thoughts going into the season are going to be a little SEC focused, because I actually know what conference our teams are playing in come next week. So that's really helpful. But
we will be in a conference.
Yes, but it's, I think for me, the one coach I'm going to be watching, I think especially closely, is Jimbo Fisher at A&M. Our fans know I can't stand the man, but I think he's already on the hot seat. If we're being honest, they were the most disappointing team last year. And Bobby Petrino is now calling the offense at Texas A&M.
Get your popcorn ready.
The most morally inappropriate coaching staff of college football.
They said he's a front runner for the Broyles Award this year. That's so you I may saw. Be eating crow there, Jesse. You may be
I know. And there. But he was great. I mean, we saw him last year and they gave Arkansas a run for their money. This might be the offensive spark that they need at A&M, because they were like a wet blanket of offense last season.
Yes. So, oh, gosh. So bad.
Maybe that's something. Bring A&M in Bobby Petrino.
Historically bad last year. Yeah. I mean, from a Georgia fan's perspective, obviously, Georgia has a favorable schedule, which through no fault of our own, obviously, the Oklahoma game got taken away because of the conference stuff. But that favorable schedule, to me, leaves no room for error. I think like one loss or maybe even like an ugly game, and I think that they might be out of it, unless there's, you know, some kind of implosion at the top. Some other teams, as far as the outlook in the upcoming season, I'm curious to see if there's any drop-off for Tennessee with the new quarterback and a new OC. So that'll be something interesting to watch. Will South Carolina continue their upward trend?
I hope so.
Very curious about that. Was last year a fluke for Brian Kelly at LSU, or is LSU back? And, you know, we heard a lot from their fans last year. I definitely, as you mentioned, Jesse, I'm going to get the popcorn out for the personality clash that will inevitably happen down at College Station. So
also, let us not forget Hugh Freeze is on the plains in Auburn.
It's funny how that's got lost in the mix here lately, been kind of quiet, but that is like a crazy story in and of itself. So, yeah,
it's wild. And also, I think at least on a more somber note, Mississippi State has a lot to do this season, right? Yeah. The devastating loss of losing coach Mike Leach, which I know we all really loved, even as opposing fans. But their program was centered around an air raid offense that is not something that you see very often. They're going to have a new coach, and inevitably, it's going to be a different offense. So it's almost like what Mike Leach was walking into when he came to Mississippi State, where all of these recruits were there for this specific style of play. And now I think you're going to start to see a shift. Those guys are not necessarily going to vibe with the offense. They might, but it's not going to be that pure kind of air raid offense. So I'm really interested to see what they do in Starkville, and truly wishing them the best. That's a really devastating loss and a hard thing to come through into a new season.
Do you have anything to add to that, Matt, or anything, or?
No, I pulled up the rankings and I was just kind of looking at the top five, and the team that kind of jumps out at me is LSU. You know, they lost four games last year, and granted they made some waves going into the end of the season, but I don't know. I feel like they're buying into this idea that the Tigers are back, and I don't know if I'm ready to buy into that yet, especially the way Tennessee boat raced them at home last year. So, between that and then you've got this Big Ten back and forth between Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan. I think at this point it's just a question of who's going to end up losing to an SEC team in the national championship. But
or who loses to Iowa in the Big Ten in regular season. I'm calling it. There's going to be an Iowa upset. Iowa's going to upset somebody. I don't know who, but they're going to upset somebody.
Final score of 6-9.
Right.
Hey. Those count.
2 yards in a cloud of dust.
Well, being from Iowa, I'm not necessarily an Iowa fan, but being from Iowa, a lot of every year they have that one upset where you're like, mm-hmm. how did they upset? The one year they upset Michigan, one year they up Ohio State. It's always that one year where they have that upset and then they end up going 8-4 in the year and they lose to Northwestern or something. So knowing about Iowa, that's definitely what happens. Now, I wasn't going to talk about this, but I actually thought this was intriguing. You mentioned Jimbo Fisher possibly being on the hot seat. Is there any other coaches? Let's start with the SEC. Is there any other coaches in the SEC that are currently on the hot seat right now?
Drinky. Missouri. I got a sneaking suspicion. Now, granted, they did just pick up a 5-star recruit the other day, and you would have thought the world had come to an end. But I think if Drinky doesn't win, at least if he's not into at least a decent bowl, I think temperature starts to go up. I really think he's got a chance at that.
That's how I feel about Napier at UF. I mean, I understand he's still new, but Florida doesn't play. They have no patience. And, you know, their rivals are Georgia. Like, you're not going to have a lot of patience there. They just lost Richardson. I don't know who picks up that torch, because even with Richardson, it was kind of abysmal down there in the swamp. So I am very interested to see if they can rise back to grace, because that fall was swift.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Jesse, that that whole thing was just wild. With Napier, and to your point, as you just mentioned, really Florida fans don't play. And it's not, I think Napier has the potential to be a good coach. It's just, is Florida going to give him the time that he needs to get everybody in place? And they're impatient, and we've seen it before. They don't last long when things don't go well.
Saban syndrome.
So. The Saban
effect. Nick Saban ruined college football. I've said it multiple times.
But also, if you look at like Miami, I know Miami had a rough season last season, but a lot of experts are calling for Miami to kind of be a little bit of a dark horse going into this season. If you've got Miami making waves in the state of Florida, people are looking towards FSU, you've got UF that's doing nothing in the state and in their conference. Not a lot of
not a good place to be. Not a happy fan base.
No.
That's interesting how you mentioned Napier, because it seems this is only his second year, but
it's a real short leash down there in Gainesville. You either get it going or they fire you and send you back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean, look at Auburn. They tried to fire their coach like 1 year in, and then they fired
a coach that took them to multiple bowl games within like a 5-year stretch.
Yeah.
The guy that was winning 8, 9, 10, 11 games a year.
Yeah, the and only one that could beat Alabama.
Exactly.
And it's funny how, I'm not saying that stuff didn't happen, but it is funny how when you're trying to get rid of a guy, all these scandals just come out of nowhere. Just like being able to fire them without paying the buyout becomes really intriguing. So
there's some scandals already happening. We haven't even gotten to the season. Looking at you, Big Ten.
Oh, I've missed the tea on this. We're going to have to discuss.
Now, JJ, you're to flip it back. I know we've been talking about the SEC a lot, but are you a Louisville fan? Did I see that?
I am. Yep. I'm a Louisville fan. Yes.
So what's your outlook for this season?
Well, we just got rid of Satterfield. I was kind of glad we didn't necessarily get rid of him. He went to Cincinnati. We got Jeff Brohm. I like the hiring. I'm expecting it to be a 7-5 year again. They have a pretty easy schedule for the most part because they don't play Clemson. They play Notre Dame, but I'm not sure necessarily. They'll probably lose that game, but we play well. We lost Malik Cunningham. That's going to be big. But I feel like with Jeff Brohm coming back to Louisville, I think we'll be more successful, but I think it might take some time. I'm just expecting a 7-5, 8-4, another bowl game that not a lot of people talk about. But I do think in a few years he could build that program up. It's just going to be hard because Satterfield Petrino kind of wrecked it. Lamar Jackson saved him way back in 2016, 2017. And then Satterfield, it was 7 years ago the last time Louisville was actually legit. But I feel like right now they're kind of in a good spot because Satterfield was just kind of there to have some winning seasons. And then he's gone now. We have Jeff Brohm. I like the hiring. I just think it's going to take some time for us to be good. We'll see what happens, but I'm expecting it to be 7-5, 8-4 again. We'll see what happens. They're kind of in a conference right now that could be the next conference to go, because it seems like Florida State and I think it was Miami or UNC wants to leave or something like that, which I wouldn't be surprised. Now, I did mention, or I did want to talk about conference realignment. It seems like the Pac-12 is pretty much dead. What happens, do you think, of those? Actually, let's first talk about the ACC. Do you think the ACC and Pac-12, or do you think the ACC gobbles up those last four teams? It'd be weird, but we all know college football doesn't make any sense now.
I know that's been the main speculation. I think that a lot of those schools might join the ACC just to remain in a Power 5 conference. Although I guess if the Pac-12 goes away, it won't be Power 5 anyway. You know what I mean? That's what I've seen a lot of people say for those. I've also seen that they might end up in a conference out west, like maybe the Mountain West. You know, who knows?
Yeah, I saw that too. There's been a lot of conjecture going around, and at this point I almost feel like we just need to get rid of the conferences and just go with like geographic divisions and just call it a day, because at this point you got kids and we talk about football, and football is the moneymaker in college football, but what about the other sports?
Baseball,
like volleyball has to go all the way to Maryland to play in the ACC when you're a Stanford
that have
team?
So many more games than football does.
It's gonna kill recruiting.
Now, the SEC is okay right now because we're still all relatively close together. Yeah. But when you start bringing in all these, like Missouri's a
cross country.
I mean, that's practically cross country from Florida. But
Oklahoma's going to be a hard one.
Oklahoma's going to be rough. The whole conference alignment thing is just the quest for more money is what it is. And the TV, I fully believe the TV executives are the one that are really pushing this stuff. And I think that's kind of what's causing it to happen.
Oh, it is 1,000%.
Yeah. And there's going to be repercussions. I don't know what they're going to look like, but down the road, I personally was okay with the SEC expanding to, I'm old enough to remember when they only had 12 teams. And then we expanded to 14. And then now we've expanded to 16. And it's just like, why do you need so many people in one conference? We can have multiple conferences. It's okay. It's not a big deal. It's just, it seems like a bad idea. It's setting
a bad
precedent. It's
money is what it boils down to. But I don't think that there's ever going to be an instance, as long as the schools can control it, I don't think there's an instance where we go into geographic regions, because you're exactly right. It is broadcast rights that is what's driving this. And I did some research. The Big Ten has a seven-year, $7 billion contract with CBS, NBC, Fox that runs runs through 2030. SEC has a 10-year, $3 billion contract with ESPN through 2034. Big 12, six-year contract with $380 million annually with ESPN and Fox running through 2031. And the ACC has a 20-year contract, about $240 million with ESPN annually through 2036. And the CW will also carry 50 football and basketball games annually.
Oh, the CW. So talk about planning ahead. 20 years? Good grief.
It's wild. But the thing is, and I, JJ, you may not know, but I'm in the process of getting a sport law degree. So a big focus for me has been antitrust law. And that's honestly what has caused all of this to happen. In 84 is when the Supreme Court ruled with the NCAA versus the Board of Regents of Oklahoma, which essentially was a monopoly antitrust lawsuit with the Sherman Act, because the NCAA was trying to control all the broadcast rights, saying that you could only be on national TV as a school six times a year, right? And then everybody else got to be on it too. They were trying to divvy up more of the money across the schools and not just to the big, big programs that were going to get a lot of exposure. Well, Georgia and Oklahoma said, that's not fair, not so fast, my friend, and sued the NCAA for violations of antitrust law. And they won. And I could get into all of this boring jargon, and I promise that everyone's eyes would glaze over. But if you are interested in antitrust law, you should look it up, because it's a fascinating case. But essentially, they ruled it in such a way that it said that what they were doing was not illegal outright, but it was hindering competition, and they didn't have a good enough reason saying like, hey, we're allowing a little bit of pro competition, so it outweighs the bad. They didn't have that. So they said, you know, NCAA, you can do some things that maybe look a little sus on antitrust as long as there's more advantage than disadvantage. In this case, there's not. Now, that ruling is what gave us like all of the issues with NIL and everything up until last year. But essentially, this ruling allowed college football and universities to go find their own contracts, their own broadcasting rights. Hello, Texas Network, right? So now that ruling is exactly why all of these schools can jump conferences to get more money, because they want those broadcast rights. And the dissenting opinion of the Supreme Court justice that wrote the dissent, he basically said, hey, you know, while this may make sense under law, this is going to be an issue in the future because it's going to start to professionalize amateur sports. And that's a huge point of contention, not only with this, but it's, you know, we've seen it with NIL. You're just going to continue to see issues. And I don't really know what they can do, because under the law, it makes sense. But right now, I think it's going to put a really big stress on our student athletes.
NCAA is going to do something. Don't know
NCAA
what.
Gonna NCAA going to
NCAA. NCAA is too busy telling kids they can't transfer schools to go be near their sick grandmother. Come on now. They have more important things to handle.
You know, that blows my mind. I thought the Pac-12 was fairly lucrative as a conference, but
yeah,
when you start throwing around
a really good brand,
when you start throwing around billion with a B, I guess that kind of makes sense too. So, good grief, man, that's wild.
It's wild when you look it up. And like I said, I'm really interested as these schools start to jump. If all of these big programs go to one conference, does that then start to violate other portions of United States antitrust laws? I think as we sit back and as we start to see this in years to come, we're going to see some lawsuits, and it's going to be fascinating how the court system handles this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's interesting, because I didn't know anything about that or didn't really know much about that, but that's very interesting. It definitely makes it more interesting, especially how college runs and how the NCAA does things. But with the Pac-12, is there a way they can possibly stay alive? I know merging with the Mountain West, merging with the ACC. Is there a way like they could get a few teams for the Mountain West and maybe convince North Dakota State and South Dakota State somehow to jump D1 or something?
This is what we call a mortal wound. You've lost everything when you lost those teams to the other conferences. And I don't see how the Pac-12 is going to be able to stay afloat after that, unless they find a way to patchwork together a bunch of teams out west, or they're able to get like a couple Big 12 teams to slide over or something. But even then, like, unless you get Ohio State and Michigan to fly over, I don't think you're going to be able to save it. I think it's a done deal.
So you have Cal, Oregon State, Stanford, and Washington State left. That's not great. Look, they're great schools, but in terms of football, which I know we're not talking about just football here, but especially in football, these schools haven't really represented you in much of anything worth mentioning lately in terms of football. Mm-hmm. Granted, I know there's other stuff going on here, but it's going to be tough. Getting other conferences to merge, maybe they could lure some of these, I say lesser in quotes, because I know there are good schools as well that you mentioned. I guess that's a possibility, but I tend to agree with Matt. I think Pac-12 is done. I think it's just kind of too far gone at this point.
I agree. There's no money in it. There's really no benefit. It's not like, I mean, they've lost their rivalries, and that's what fuels so much of college football. Yeah. What's the point? Now they're not even necessarily going to play each other, these rivals, every year. So,
and that right there is the worst part about conference realignment, is you are gutting decades, in some cases damn near centuries worth of, or a century's worth of rivalry games. Like Cal Stanford is the game. Like Washington State, this was it, the Apple Bowl or whatever they called it? I forget what it was called. Oregon State's known as the Civil War. Like, there are families that's a tradition to sit down and watch those games. And now poof, because some people want to make some extra money, which I understand, but you've gutted it. You've gutted it. It's almost like if you took away Alabama, Tennessee, if you took away Georgia Tech, which granted they're in different conferences, but still, Like, still, you gutted that particular thing that makes college football so special compared to other sports.
Now, yeah. they have done this in the SEC to a certain extent already with all this realignment, but they've tried to make sure, and they've had all these extensive meetings and stuff to try to preserve a lot of these rivalries. And I do hope they do that with a lot of these. Because like you said, there's, you know, decades, maybe a century for some of these worth of history. And it would be a shame if it were to be lost because of just, you know, realignment. I'm sure they could figure out a way to have these teams play each other every year in much the same way Georgia Tech plays and a lot of these other schools do at the end of the season, the rivalries
are just, I think, so special in college sports in general. I won't just say football because they exist outside of football as well. But for college sports, you actually, as a fan, have the opportunity to be a part of that family, right? Like, you can attend that school or you can have a connection to that school. Whereas, yes, we love our pro teams. Absolutely. And we're going to watch them on Sunday and Monday and all of that. The chances of us, you know, playing for that organization or working for that organization is very, very slim. But to go to a university and to spend some really formative years there and be entrenched in that culture, those rivalries are so special. And so I agree. I hope that they make it a point to make sure that you can actually play your rival. But as we continue to see a push to play more in-conference games, or more ranked games, I just don't know that they're going to make it a priority, but I hope they do.
Yeah, and it seems like pretty much all this comes down to is just making a few extra bucks, as Matt, you pointed out. Just make an extra bucks.
That, I mean, it's a lot of bucks. It's a ton of bucks. Don't get us wrong.
It is.
But at some point, you have to look at it and say, at what point are we willing to completely break the mold of what we have?
And what is this going to do to the game?
Yeah.
And other sports, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah. Well, let's continue. Let's talk a little more about the Pac-12. I just kind of want to talk about, there's four teams remaining, as we mentioned, Washington State. Washington State, Stanford, California, and
Oregon State.
Oregon State, yeah. What happens to those four teams? Because I heard there's some teams that could possibly go independent while other teams just go in the Mountain West. What do you think happens with those four remaining teams?
Don't go independent. I hate it. Notre Dame, I'm looking at you.
You hate it, but man, Notre Dame has made a career and a name out of it. Look at the matchups they get to do every year, which, granted, I know is not the greatest matchups on the planet.
Notre Dame has made a career of
making
it to the big stage and then not delivering.
Oh, no, you did it.
And I think a lot of that comes down to, you don't have an identity. You don't have something that you can build through every year in terms of opponents and things like that. Like you said, I know they get good matchups, but I don't know. I just feel like a lot of these other conferences are able to, I don't know if more organized is the word, but basically you kind of know what to expect every year. You get in a groove. I don't know if Notre Dame really has that. I don't know if they have a standard that they can look to and say, okay, we're here based on how we've done.
I think going independent would hurt recruiting too. Like, you're a recruit and you're like, we're independent, we'll figure out who we'll play later. No, you want to play somewhere that you're like, I know I'm going to play a rival. I know I'm going to be traveling to these places. Like, you want that, I would imagine, as a recruit. I was not heavily recruited for college football, but I imagine that's going to be a draw. So I think they have to join a conference. I don't know what it's going to be, but they got to join. I doubt it's going to be ACC. Because that trip just doesn't make sense for the other sports. And the ACC had the smallest of the million billion contracts. Mm. So they don't want to spread that out any further than they have.
They're locked in for 20 years.
I know.
Not to mention, when you look at what the Mountain West consists of, like, you've got a couple of big names there. Like, right now, Colorado's a big brand in the Mountain West. You have Boise State, that traditionally has always been another team that's always had some press around them. But then once you get outside of that, like New Mexico, Wyoming, Utah State, Nevada.
Wyoming, you got Josh Allen.
Well, okay, fine. You got one good quarterback out of all the players.
Go Pokes.
No offense to those folks in Wyoming. I'm sure it's a lovely place. But I think that Cal and Stanford, I feel like they're a step above that. It would be almost like, I don't know, Kentucky joining, I don't know, the WAC or something. Like, it just doesn't.
Well, I think they are a step above in some other sports. Like, yeah, Stanford, you want to be a swimmer, go to Stanford. Right? Yeah. But like football, they haven't really done much since what, Andrew Luck? I mean,
yeah. Yeah, it's been a minute out there. I mean, the only reason I would think that might happen is just you do what you do, you got to do to survive. And that's the only reason I could see something like that happening for them to emerge.
They have to join, because swimming's a great example. Do you know how many Olympians swim at Stanford? And not just swimming, other Olympic sports, you take them out of a conference, they don't get those broadcasting dollars. They can't support that program financially. We get into Title IX issues. It becomes a whole thing. We don't have Olympians.
Right.
Oh, no. We'll always have those. They're going to find some place to go swim, run.
Conference realignment equals no Olympians.
No Olympians.
No Olympians.
No, that's not.
That's the title of the episode. No, I'm just kidding.
It does seem like right now with those four teams, if they did go to a conference, it seems like the Mountain West would make the most sense, unless they just start their own conference and get a few teams here and there. But it does seem like the Mountain West is going to just get all those teams. We'll see what happens. Now let's get off the Pac-12 a little bit. I know this isn't necessarily an SEC talk, but Jim Harbaugh suspension, that is very interesting.
Matt loves Jim Harbaugh.
He does.
Look, big fan.
No. Hold on. Just a moment. I don't love Jim Harbaugh, but I don't trust any man that orders milk with steak. Okay, I'm not going to. I don't trust any man that the only pants he wear khakis. Like I just,
you have on your khakis.
No, I'm wearing basketball shorts like God intended, because it's 6,000 degrees outside in Central Georgia.
Right.
But I'm sorry, JJ. Go ahead, finish your point.
Well, I mean, with the Jim Harbaugh suspension, it first started off as he was suspended 4 games. The NCAA suspended him, and then they had pressure. Then they took off the suspension. Now the university has had a self-imposed 3-game suspension. The games aren't really big games, so they should be able to win all of them. But, I mean, I'm just kind of confused on why. I mean, basically why he got suspended was because he paid for cheeseburgers for some recruits. I think that was a bad suspension, but... What do you guys think about it? And I mean, what do you guys think about the suspension altogether?
Those damn cheeseburgers. I'm just kidding.
Did they come in a McDonald's bag? That's my question.
Gosh.
They actually did come with a milk carton. So oh,
cool. Yes. Okay. There you go. I don't know. I think the self-imposed suspension, isn't that supposed to soften the blow? Because I know that NCAA had the suspension and then it was removed, but aren't they kind of taking the time and making an official ruling in 2024? I think that's what I heard. I don't know.
Yeah, so they are.
I think
Harbaugh could be in the NFL by then. Like, what do you?
That's just true. Yeah,
I think that's 4 games to be done.
Like, I think if they're doing self-imposed and they're waiting for a 2024 ruling, there's got to be more to it than cheeseburgers, and we just don't know it yet. I think you're just softening it. Like, look, we're behaving. We said he did bad too. Don't give us sanctions. Don't take away scholarships. Don't ban us from bowl games. Something has got to be coming down the pipeline that we don't know about.
So I know the period of time, the dead period they're discussing to me, that's a bit odd. It was during COVID. I know. What they're discussing anyway. So I think it's a bit odd to have these blocks of time anyway. I get that gifts in the form of a cheeseburger probably shouldn't be allowed, or any kind of gifts, I guess. But the no contact rule to me just seems strange. And I know that's what a lot of this hinges on. I know it's probably designed to protect players from like being bombarded and stuff like that, but I feel like it's just another thing to get in trouble for. Right. And part of me feels like it's unnecessary. I know that some of their off the field coaches are under investigation by the NCAA for doing on the field coaching during practice, which also seems nitpicky to me too. It's like, I don't know. I get that we have to have standards for all these different things, and I'm sure there's a lot more to it, and there's reasons for these rules. I'm sure they're not just arbitrary, but to me, a lot of these rules just seem kind of silly and just something else to lead to a snag and legal trouble. I don't know. Jesse, you could probably speak to that way, way, way better.
It all depends. NCAA is going to NCAA. But it does. It depends on the ruling, right? Like, a lot of NCAA rules are intended to protect the amateurism of the sport. A lot of them are intended to protect, you know, the scholarships and all of the rules that go into a scholarship, whether it's the amount of, you know, hours you're putting forth toward your sport, which are restricted, especially for athletes that are on visas. That's another thing that comes up with NIL a lot, is how is that going to go against their visas? Because their sport acts kind of like work. Again, we could go down a whole rabbit hole, but these violations, while super annoying and super silly, you know them, right? Like, you just know them. And I did an interview this past semester with one of the compliance officers at Florida. And it's like, if you ever have a question, go ask compliance before you do it. Like, they always want you to just come ask. And they have people that are specialized in all different areas of compliance for these rules, because the rules change constantly. But don't do something dumb. Like, just don't do it, especially if you're at a premier program like Michigan. People are going to be looking for a reason to give you a violation. You know it. Don't do it. Give something to a booster to do it. You do anyways. We all do.
You gotta love it when it just hits the fan like that. I think the Harbaugh situation is just another little feather in the cap of the NCAA. Things that they're inconsistent on, wishy-washy on.
They can't tag you on NIL anymore. They're going to find something.
They can't get out of their own way. It's a hot mess. I think the other big problem is, I think Harbaugh at some point lied to the NCAA about something. And if you ask anybody, especially a former coach at the University of Tennessee named Bruce Pearl, you don't lie to the NCAA. That's a bad idea. It's a very poor choice. So
yeah. It's like your mom. They'll find out.
Yeah, the NCAA always finds a way to, they always like getting the suspension there and figure out a way to suspend him. And yeah, so we'll see what happens with Harbaugh. Real quick as well, I want to talk a little bit about the Heisman. Caleb Williams. So
Matt's very bitter about the Heisman, if you can't tell. Matt, share the story. You're a Tennessee fan. Tell everyone.
No, there's nothing to talk about. I don't need to be in this segment. Y'all go ahead.
So basically, Matt feels that Peyton Manning should have
won the
Heisman
many years ago. We'll talk about my stuff. Go ahead.
We don't have to talk about this if you don't want to.
No, JJ, I'm completely kidding. I think the Heisman is a giant piece of garbage, and it's a useless trophy that means absolutely nothing. But that's just me. Go ahead, Wes.
Matt, stop, you know, just beating around the bush. Just like tell everyone how you feel.
Adulterated garbage.
Yeah, no, I shared those feelings too, mainly because I've seen it over the years as a popularity contest. And this is just from watching things firsthand. And I think we all kind of get that. I mean, even the people who like the Heisman probably grasp that it is more or less of a popularity contest. I mean, when's the last time you saw an offensive tackle in the Heisman running, right? So, I mean, it's like he might be the best one we've seen in, you know, decades, but he's not going to get the Heisman.
Our kicker scored the most points for our university ever. He wasn't invited. We won a natty.
Yeah. And I know Caleb Williams is like the expected front runner this year. And I think most people you ask will say that. But as far as our opinion, I'm not going to speak for them, but for me, it's just, I understand that it's a popularity contest and we'll see. Obviously, I know everyone, especially our betting friends, love all the lines and everything at this point in the season and just, you know, making those bets early on. But we're really not going to know until the first few weeks of the season kind of get in. And then as we get into the thick of the schedule, how these players are really going to respond to that kind of Heisman limelight. So.
Well, I mean, the Heisman is similar to the NFL MVP, which it always usually goes to a quarterback, even though, like you saw last year with Justin Jefferson, you saw the year before that with Cooper Kupp. It's always going to be to a quarterback or every once in a while a running back. But yeah, it's similar to that, where if you're a non-quarterback, you're likely not going to win it. But do you guys, is there anybody that we're not talking about that's going to have a really good season that we're just not really mentioning?
I have three. And again, I'm going to apologize that it's mostly SEC focused, but these are the three that I think if the Heisman means something, and they aren't hurt and things go as I think. I'm looking at Quinshon Judkins, running back from Ole Miss. I think he had a great season. I'm really interested to see what Lane Kiffin does with him this season. Brock Bowers, tight end from UGA. I think it's silly not to consider him. He is a huge weapon for UGA. They don't want a natty last year without Brock Bowers. Plain and simple. And then as much as it makes me want to throw up to say this, I'm saying look at Jaden Daniels, QB at LSU.
I'm disappointed.
What, because I didn't say an Alabama person?
No, you didn't say Joe Milton, for God's sake.
I think people are talking about him, though.
Did you see what he did to Clemson last year, Jesse?
I know, but people are talking about him. I think they're enough about the others.
I'm really disappointed.
I know, and I know
I think he's just a question mark right now, right? And
I'm being a homer. He's a complete question mark. I don't know.
And I know that you're nervous because Hendon Hooker should have been at the Heisman last year. And
we don't need to talk about what happened last year with Hendon Hooker and Heisman and all that garbage.
So I think nobody doubts Joe Milton's just raw talent as far as how far he can throw the ball and all that kind of stuff. I think people are just curious as to how he's going to do.
Yeah. I'm the same way. So I was mostly memeing.
Well, Hendon Hooker was good last year until the injury. And then, I think he'll be good. I think he'll be the future for Detroit, but I think he's definitely going to be good. But now that we kind of mentioned that, we don't have a whole lot of time here, but I do kind of want to mention last year we had TCU had that magical run until they got smoked in the championship game. But is there a version of TCU this year, like another team that will have that run similar to TCU, or is it just that we won't see that for another few years?
I don't know that they're going to the championship, but I think they're going to surprise some people, and I hope I'm not wrong. I think Kentucky, and I say that, I know, Matt, Levis is gone, and I know everyone was like, oh, Will Levis, which honestly, his draft night made me laugh. But they brought in an NC State transfer quarterback in Devin Leary to take over the starting role. Leary missed half of the season with an injury, so a lot of people are probably not thinking about him. But he was one of the best quarterbacks in the country in 2021. And Leary threw for 3,433 yards, 35 touchdowns with only 5 interceptions while completing 65.7% of his attempts. I think in that position, with his offensive coordinator in Liam Cohen returning after being in the NFL shortly, I think the meshing of those two it's going to be really good. It's a new offensive coordinator. It's a new quarterback. I think it's going to bring some fresh blood in there. And then, you know, they've also got Ray Davis, who is a running back transfer from Vanderbilt. So I think there's going to be some momentum around the Cats, and they might just surprise a few people, not just in the SEC.
Do you guys have a dark horse or something like a similar to what TCU did last year?
So within the conference, I think I might say South Carolina, maybe, because this will be Spencer Rattler's 5th season. You know, things have been trending upwards there, and they seem to get just a little bit better every year and surprise some people. I'm sorry, Matt, I know it's still too soon, I feel you. Georgia's been beaten by South Carolina many times when they shouldn't have. So I definitely understand that. But so I would go with them within conference. Outside of the conference, maybe Florida State. I know a lot of people are kind of expecting them to get kind of back to, you know, the brand as far as the respect goes on the brand. So we'll see how that goes. You know, obviously they were looking upwards last year as well. So, I mean, I'm really intrigued to see if that trend will continue.
Did you have anybody matter?
Actually, there's one team that comes to mind, but I do want to comment on Wes's opinion on South Carolina. I think as much as I detest everything that has to do with Beamer ball at this point, after what happened last season, I think Carolina is a team that we're going to have to keep an eye out for. I don't know. I'm kind of still wishy-washy on them. But the real team I'm concerned about is in the SEC West, and that's Auburn. Hugh Freeze, I think Hugh Freeze was a winner the first stint he was there. He turned Liberty into a contender, and Liberty for football has never, ever, ever been good. And Hugh Freeze came in, and immediately that team was a different animal. Not to mention the resources, the pockets in Auburn are real deep. I don't know what their recruiting's looked like since he took over, but I've always been a big fan of Hugh Freeze, aside from the whole prostitutes and cell phone thing. But aside from that, I thought he did a great job in that first stint at Auburn. I think he's got another chance to do another great stint here. They're my dark horse in the West.
He just has to find a quarterback, and he has to find him early.
That's the problem, is where are you going to find your quarterback, and are you going to be able to get everything kind of lined up in year one?
He's never really had any problem finding offense, though.
No,
that's true. Mm-hmm.
All righty, that's good. That's good stuff. We'll see what happens there. Definitely have a lot to go here next week. Basically, next week is the official. It starts this week, but it's the official week next week. So, real quick, I know we're running out of time here, but do you guys want to do a blind ranking coaches 1 through 5?
Let's do it.
All right. Number one, Dabo Swinney.
What are we ranking? Are we ranking them one to five, five being the best?
Or one being the best, five being the worst. And then, just 1 through 5.
Oh, like on a scale of 1 to 5.
Dabo. Basically. Yeah.
Ooh.
I'm going to put him in a solid 2.5. I think Dabo gets a lot of crap because it's Dabo and he brings a lot of things on himself. But I think he's a decent ball coach. I mean, Clemson, prior to his showing up, wasn't that great. And granted, there have been some extenuating circumstances, which we've discussed on our podcast. But I think 2.5 is a decent number for him.
If you're talking about overall career, I think Dabo is probably a 5 just in terms of what he's done. But if we're talking about currently,
I thought 5 was the worst.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Yeah. 1 is the best. 5 is the worst. Yeah.
My bad.
He's like, you don't like Dabo.
He's
just
a 1.
Flip it around, Wes. You'll get there.
Yeah, we're just flipping it. He's a 1. But if we're talking about currently right now, gosh, I'd have to say like a 4 because the dude has not adapted to NIL. He's not adapted to the transfer portal. I don't know. I just think currently he's stumbling a bit. And now, granted, he may, find his feet, as it were. But I don't think he's trending in the right direction right now as a coach.
I give him a 3. Same reasons. Historically, great. But he is holding on too tightly to some things that he just needs to evolve.
Mm-hmm. All right. Another coach. He's in the SEC, Lane Kiffin.
I struggle so much with Lane. Honestly, recently, he's like made me start to like him. And I struggle with that a lot. I think them implementing like mental health services and making that a priority for the football program and athletics in general is a huge step forward. I think that's amazing for them to do at Ole Miss. I think his players really, really like him and that he advocates for them. And I can't imagine being coached by that man, but
because they're bros,
hell of an offensive mind. He's so good and he's not afraid to just go for it. I'm going to give Lane a 2.
I would say the 2 also, with definitely potential to take that next step. I think that he's just a few pieces away of having a really good team. Clearly, he has a great mind, especially when it comes to offense. But they just need a few more pieces, and he'll be there.
Yeah, many a night I toss and turn thinking about what could have been if Joey Freshwater had stayed at the University of Tennessee rather than taking that midnight plane to California. But if I had to put a number to it, I'd say I think he's trending the right way. And I think Wes is right. A couple things are out of place, but they would be great. So I'm going to say 2.8.
I love the decimals.
I know.
All righty, Lincoln Riley.
Oof.
Oh, this is hard. I'm going to say solid 2, because I think he's got a lot of potential and he showed that he can win and he showed that he could put together a program.
I would say solid 2. Yeah, I would agree with that number. I think I kind of not to put him and Lane on the same like wavelength, but in kind of the same mentality as far as taking a program that USC, you know, obviously used to be, you know, powerhouse on the national landscape, and then kind of took a few steps back. I feel like he's kind of already kind of getting them a little bit back in the right direction there. And clearly he has the appeal to recruit as well. And he seems like a Southern Cal kind of guy anyway. So I think he fits in well down there. So I think he'll do well. Solid two.
I'm giving him a 2.97. I don't like how we left Oklahoma.
Yeah, that was dirty. Yeah.
I think that was really dirty. He also stole Jalen Hurts. So it just, I hold a lot of grudges there. I do think he's a really young, promising talent. And I think when he gets somewhere, his players really like him. But I think there's a lot of hard feelings in Norman.
No doubt. That'd
help USC if they ever play Oklahoma.
Ooh.
If they have to go to Oklahoma for a game,
he'll get golf balls thrown at him or mustard.
When he was talking to those recruits out at USC and, you know, making all these promises. And remember that story where the Oklahoma players tweeted back and were like, don't worry, he told us the same thing last week.
I know.
That's pretty rough.
All right, on to another SEC coacher, Brian Kelly.
I'm going to go ahead and put a two because, you know, he's already a guy who did not seem like a good fit down at LSU with the family and everything like that.
So awful.
You know, it's amazing how many gaffes like that will be forgotten if you win football games. And so that's what he did a lot of last year. And, you know, there were a few bumps in the road, but definitely already turning the program in the right direction. So I'll give him a solid two.
LSU is a very impatient school, though. May I remind you of Coach Ed Orgeron? He won a natty. And then he was
gone.
Les Miles won a natty. And then they
Les Miles won a natty. He was gone. So yeah. I would put him at a three. I think what has given that program and a lot of faith in him is the fact that they beat Alabama. Mm-hmm. So I'll give him a three.
Yeah.
Still can't believe they went for two.
You gotta roll the dice sometimes, Wes.
Yeah.
I'm unwell.
I'm going to go with a three as well. And only because, you know, I'm going to say this on our show here, probably next week when we start talking about it. I think LSU might be a little overhyped. Just a hair. There's a lot. They had four losses last season. They got boat raced at home by Tennessee. I don't see it. No disrespect for the Tiger faithful, but I don't know if Brian Kelly's got all the pieces in place quite yet. So I'm going to say three.
All right. Last person, Big Ten, Ryan Day.
I'd have to go middle of the road with him right now, because I mean, obviously he's done some good things at the program, but I also feel like they've lost a few games that they probably shouldn't have. So probably a 2.5.
Georgia.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that was a tough game all around, and there's a lot going on there.
What number did you give? I said two and a half.
I was right in the middle.
You said 2.5? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and put a 3.5 there, because I feel like Day was given the keys to a Ferrari, and so far he hasn't put it in the ditch. Ohio State's a team that's easy to recruit, and they're in a conference that if you can put together a couple things, you could probably win the thing. I mean, last year, the only team they really had to worry about was Michigan, right? The rest of the Big Ten's kind of a toss up. No disrespect for the Big Ten fans out there, but I need to see more before I can bump it any higher than that.
Yeah, I'd give him a three. I don't think that you've seen a test of him. I want to see more of a tougher in conference schedule, which again, that relies on the other schools to actually be tougher, and see how he performs in out of conference games.
Yeah, I mean, Ryan Day, he pretty much got a gold mine on a team, and yet he's done everything, but he's lost to Michigan twice, which a lot of Ohio State fans are not happy with him. And if he loses again this year to Michigan,
that's a problem.
it could be a huge problem. So, all right. Yep. So thanks again for coming on, guys. Is there something else you want to mention? Sorry, we ran a little over, but is there anything else you guys want to mention before we end the interview?
Roll Tide.
Yes. Go dogs. Go ahead, Wes. Oh, thanks. Lord. Thanks for having us on, JJ. It was a lot of fun. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I guess I'll say go balls because these two schmucks decided to throw their little plug out there. But yeah, JJ, we've had a blast, man. Thanks for coming. Yeah. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thanks again. We got to probably have you guys back on once the season gets going, and not sure when, but I'd love to have you guys come on again. Again, all the links will be down in the description below as normal. Again, thanks for coming on, and enjoy week 0 and enjoy the rest of college football season.